This is special coverage from NPR News. In Washington, I'm Linda Wertheimer.
I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Robert Siegel in New York. Of the four planes that were hijacked today, one did not reach its target. United Airlines Flight 93 from Newark to San Francisco crashed in Pennsylvania. There were 45 people on board when the jet slammed into a grassy field. NPR's Ken Barkas is just outside Shanksville, Pennsylvania, in the south central part of the state. It's about 80 miles southeast of Pittsburgh. And Ken, this is the flight from which there have been stories, at least, that passengers were making calls on their cell phones describing what was happening in the flight. Is that correct?
That's what we hear. We've heard that there was one passenger for sure who was in a bathroom, apparently, who was calling 911 and saying that the plane was being hijacked. The 911 dispatcher listened as long as he could and then heard an explosion, and that was the last thing they heard. What's remarkable about the site, Robert, is how remote this is. On the way here, I've seen many Amish or Mennonite out in their field. This is really a very remote area. Where it actually crashed looks like it's a reclaimed strip mine. It's a large field, as you mentioned, about 80 miles east of Pittsburgh. And really, there are hundreds and hundreds of federal officials here. It's almost an alphabet soup of agencies, ATF, FBI, NTSB. Most surprisingly, some of the first people here were actually postal inspectors. No one is being turned away who can help out here. There are even road crews from Pennsylvania that are helping at the site right now.
But helping at the site at this point, I assume, it doesn't mean that people hold out any hope of rescuing passengers or crew, do they?
Well, I think that's right. There are, this is a 3 to 5 mile area of a crime scene, a huge crime scene. One person who went actually into the woods where pieces of the plane seemed to be scattered came out and saying that there was no piece larger than a phone book, that he didn't see any bodies at all. He didn't see any pieces of the plane that were larger than a phone book. Someone else said they thought that, an ATF official said, the plane literally broke up into thousands of pieces.
Does it seem from what people describe that the plane was still flying west, that is, as it would have been from Newark to San Francisco when it went down?
I think so. There was a guy I talked to who was running a bulldozer who said it came down about, he said if it had come down 50 feet sooner, he wouldn't be here right now. It came down very fast. The people around here, even in a town 2-3 miles away, felt the shaking and vibrations before they heard an explosion. I'm seeing them now bringing in cadaver-sniffing dogs. They're also bringing in dozens of these huge diesel-powered lights, assuming that they're going to be into the investigation well into the night here.
Thank you, Ken. NPR's Ken Barkas speaking to us from Shanksville, Pennsylvania. That's about 80 miles southeast of Pittsburgh.
One of the hijacked flights in the attack this morning was American Airlines Flight 11, a Boeing 767 flying from Boston to Los Angeles. The plane was carrying 81 passengers, 9 flight attendants, and 2 pilots. NPR's Mandalit Del Barco is in Los Angeles. Mandalit, what is going on there at the airport? Have they been treating this the way they generally treat a crash, summoning families to the airport?
Yes, as you know, the Los Angeles airport is closed. It was evacuated this morning, and officials from the airport and the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, are talking to reporters. We're expecting another briefing in a few minutes, but they said that they were working with the FBI and the Los Angeles police. People who, this morning at the airport, I went there before it was closed, and people who were waiting to get on flights were turned away and are now stranded. Some of the relatives of the passengers on those planes were whisked away to places where they hopefully were going to get some counseling, possibly to deal with, although there's no list, definitive list of who the passengers were yet. The airlines have not released those complete lists yet, but they are waiting to find out more about their relatives, and details are still a little sketchy. I know that I can tell you that in Los Angeles, a number of events have been canceled. They might seem a little bit minor right now, but the Latin Grammys, a big concert by Madonna, was canceled. The U.S.-Mexico border is on alert, and people are just stunned. Theme parks are closed. Disneyland is closed. Hollywood movie studios are shut down. Right now, people are just kind of anxious to find out more details because, as you know, a number of those those flights were on their way to Los Angeles. 3 of the flights that were involved today in the incidents were
on their way to L.A. Mandalit, with LAX closed today, as airports were across the country, any sense of when those airports will reopen very quickly?
Well, we might know in a few minutes. They're going to be giving another briefing today. But it looks like they're going to be closed indefinitely. I know that the state buildings, government buildings are closed, and they're, the government just announced that they might open again tomorrow.
Thanks very much. NPR's Mandalit Del Barco reporting from Los Angeles.
NPR's Jackie Northam is in Chicago, where the Sears Tower was evacuated this morning and state government buildings were shut down. Jackie, what's been the response there in downtown Chicago?
Well, it's very, very quiet. It's almost eerily quiet in downtown Chicago right now. The lights are off and the doors are locked in most buildings in the Loop, including the major department stores and, as you said, the Sears Tower, other major buildings like the Hancock Center. The city officials began closing the buildings and evacuating them after it became clear that it wasn't just an isolated attack on the World Trade Center. The Pentagon had also been hit, and there was a fear that Chicago could also be a target. So they felt it was just better to play it safe and evacuate people.
What other precautions have been taken there?
Well, they've closed some schools. They've closed a lot of the shopping malls in the suburbs. They've closed all the federal buildings. Again, all the shops downtown. There's a real fear here because it's a major American city with several landmarks like the Sears Tower. And the fear is what's stopping the same kind of attack from happening here.
So there is apprehension, but the attacks took place in New York and Washington, not yet in Chicago. Still, people are concerned.
Yeah, they certainly are. The few people that I talked to who are remaining downtown today, that was their main fear. And the other one, of course, was disbelief at just the extent of this attack.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you.
And NPR's Jackie Northam in Chicago.
In Florida today, reaction to today's terrorist attack included the closing of Walt Disney World and the suspension of the space shuttle operations. NPR's Philip Davis is in Miami. What are people in Florida saying today, Philip?
Well, as you know, the president was in Florida when the attacks occurred. He was attending an education event in the Sarasota area. He was reading to school children at the time, and that's when he made his first remarks about the statement of regret and that the U.S. would try to hunt down the perpetrators of this incident before he left. Meanwhile, the rest of Florida is just in a state of shock and an elevated state of alert. The U.S. Armed Forces Southern Command headquarters is here in Miami, and a spokesman told me that the facility is heightening its security measures and is restricting entrance into the facility and has posted more guards and has taken other precautions that he preferred not to talk about. Meanwhile, in the civilian government, the president's brother, Governor Jeb Bush, declared a state of emergency in Florida. Bush says it's just mainly a preemptive action, but he ordered the state house evacuated anyway, and state flags are flying at half-mast. But the governor says he expects the state government to be open for business tomorrow.
Right.
As you mentioned...
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
NPR's Philip Davis reporting from Miami.
Mark Sedaklik of Minnesota Public Radio is in Minneapolis, where he joins us now. The airport there is closed, as is the Mall of America in suburban Bloomington. What's been the response there in the Twin Cities, Mark?
No, very much like it's been in other parts of the country. People are saddened, they're shocked, they're uneasy about what's going to happen next. As you note, some of the landmark buildings in this area are closed. We have a World Trade Center building in downtown St. Paul that was evacuated. And the tallest building in Minnesota, the IDS building in downtown Minneapolis, was also evacuated. Many of the workers were not forced out of their offices, left on their own accord to go home so they could be with their families. Most public schools in Minnesota remained open during the day. Many of them had heightened security. Some after-school activities and events were canceled. It's a big story here. Obviously, New York and Washington, D.C. don't seem very far away to people here today.
And any word on when these buildings might reopen?
No, we don't know exactly what's happening here. You know, the news keeps changing in terms of what's going to be open, what's going to be closed, when the airport's going to open, this sort of thing. The governor has activated a state emergency center. We have a special hotline established for people to report any specific, suspicious activity. The National Guard's on heightened alert in Minnesota, and security at state buildings has been increased. A lot of different precautionary measures in place. The officials here are urging the citizenry to be calm, and one gets a sense that a lot of the actions they're taking are intended simply to reassure a very shaken public that there will be order.
Thank you, Mark.
Yep.
Mark Zdechlik of Minnesota Public Radio speaking with us from Minneapolis.
Shortly after this morning's attacks, an Arab satellite television station reported that a radical Palestinian group, the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, had claimed responsibility for them. But DFLP spokesman quickly denied any involvement, as did the leader of the Islamist group, Hamas. Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat condemned the bombings as shocking and unbelievable, and he offered condolences. But as NPR's Jennifer Ludden reports from Jerusalem, many Palestinians celebrated today's tragedies.
From Palestinian refugee camps in southern Lebanon to several cities of the West Bank, spontaneous rallies erupted as the extent of the attacks became known. Some 3,000 people marched in Nablus, clapping hands and waving Palestinian flags as gunmen fired into the air. In East Jerusalem, outside the walls of the old city, a couple dozen celebrants handed out sweets to passers-by, a ritual gesture of festivity. A few drivers honked their horns in approval and flashed V for victory signs. Israeli police quickly dispersed the gathering, but shopkeepers lining the route were happy to explain their reaction. Money changer Nasser Kord, like many, felt certain the attacks were committed to further the cause of the Palestinians and to protest the U.S.'s unconditional support of Israel.
They accept whatever Israel does. So maybe they will think back now, they will think again. It's not good to be, you have to be straight with everybody. We are children, we are people, we want to live. Why should you support Israel regarding if it is right or wrong? They support Israel.
Over and over, Palestinians here denounced President Bush's unwillingness to intervene in the year-long Arab-Israeli conflict and his tacit support of Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon. Another money changer who wouldn't give his name blamed Bush for Sharon's escalating use of force in the occupied territories.
He gave Sharon the green light to kill everybody. He don't care. He don't care for anybody.
I don't support these attacks on innocent human beings, he said. But let Americans now feel our suffering. Nasser Kord said, Bush has a policy of war. This is what Bush wanted. This is what he gets. Israelis reacted to the attacks with shock and tightened security. Authorities announced that Tel Aviv's international airport would be closed to foreign airliners for at least 24 hours. Israeli diplomatic staff in the U.S. and several other locations were also stripped down to essential employees. One foreign ministry official said, no one really understands this, who's behind it or what their aim is. We're waiting for it to become more clear. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News, Jerusalem.
We'll be back in a moment with more coverage of today's attacks on New York and Washington, D.C. This is NPR.
This is a special report from NPR News on today's terrorist acts. I'm Robert Siegel in New York.
And in Washington, I'm Linda Wertheimer. Today's attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon were remarkably well-coordinated. John Baracchini runs the Washington office of the Monterey Institute of International Studies. Mr. Baracchini, you've studied terrorist motivations and behavioral patterns. Does what we have seen today fit into some kind of pattern?
It fits to a certain degree. What we see today is unprecedented in many ways. But based on other attacks, mass casualty attacks, that seem incomprehensible by most of us, there is the pattern, if indeed the perpetrators are who we seem to believe they are, that is, people affiliated with Osama bin Laden, if those are the perpetrators, or somebody affiliated with the previous World Trade Center bombers, they have articulated their motivations as being revenge, retribution, wanting to demonstrate to Americans that there's a penalty for supporting Israel, and a range of psychological motivations, such as affirming that they are superior and that they hold the lives of thousands of people in their hands.
You wrote a report on the last attempt on the World Trade Center, attempt to bomb the World Trade Center. Why is that a choice? Why does that such a potent symbol for people to attack?
It's an excellent question, because today it seems as though the symbol of our financial power, the World Trade Center, and the symbol of our military power, the Pentagon, were the targets of attack. But in 1993, I think it was more complicated. Certainly the World Trade Towers are an important symbol. But they also were directly in the line of sight across from the storage shed where the World Trade Center bombers were building their bomb. So they saw them every day. And moreover, one of the perpetrators of the World Trade Center bombing in 93 worked in a car company whose business was right opposite the World Trade Center. So many of his hires, people that he picked up, he got them right there at the World Trade Center. Finally, an important part is that at that time, the World Trade Center was one of the few buildings in the area with an underground garage.
But you're describing sort of informal reasons why people would choose the world, because convenience would be one of the reasons to choose it. These attacks today seem extraordinary. They seem sophisticated, involving people who are capable of piloting airliners, something that completely seems to have escaped the notice of those people who are trying to prevent these kinds of attacks and jump in before they happen. I think most Americans are just stunned by the possibility that such a thing could happen at all.
No question. This is off scale and unprecedented. There was a report, a White House Commission on Aviation Security and Safety in 1997, which followed the downing or the crash of TWA 800. The question in my mind today is, what measures have we implemented from that report? What did that report look at that might have prevented what happened today? It's been quite some time since we've had a hijacking in this country. So there clearly, this is breaking new ground. But there are events that require or that should be looked at in the past. There is the concern that the Air Egypt crash off of the East Coast may have been a suicide crash. There was a case in 1994 where some people from the armed Islamic group of Algeria hijacked a plane and had it fly over Paris and threatened to have it crash, or had it fly towards Paris and threatened to have it crash.
So there have been some indications that something like this might have been in the cards. You, in your study of the World Trade Center, you indicated that it was built to withstand an airplane crashing into it.
Well, it was built to withstand a crash of a 707, which is a much smaller plane than those planes that are believed to have crashed into it today. Of course, that could never be tested. Today it was tested with a plane of a whole other size and magnitude, and the tragic results we see.
Mr. Parrachini, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
John Parrachini runs the Washington office of the Monterey Institute of International Studies.
After this morning's explosions at the World Trade Center, most buildings in Manhattan emptied out, and the people who work in them attempted the long trek home. But the reverse was true for Manhattan hospitals, like Bellevue, just a few miles uptown from the blasts and the city's main trauma center. Nurses and doctors, scheduled or not scheduled, arrived at the hospital to work. And by 11:30 this morning, a couple of dozen New Yorkers were lined up at the entrance to Bellevue. They wanted to volunteer.
I'm a minister. I'm a minister. I wanted to know if there's anything that they can do. If anyone needs to be, they need me to talk to them.
You're a minister?
Yes.
Okay.
Medical students turned up. A dentist presented himself to offer whatever help he might be able to provide. But the main assistance Bellevue needed was blood.
O positive, O negative, AAB, front of line, please.
Inside the rotunda of the hospital, the volunteers filled out forms, waited for their names to be called, and then got in line for their blood to be taken. Among them, James Stevenson and George Schneff, two men both of whom had been downtown in the financial district when the blasts occurred.
So I was working on 25th Street on Blue College. I'm a construction worker, and I saw the explosion. You know, we went up to the roof and saw. I came here because I'm a registered nurse, but I came here to volunteer. And they, you know, right now they're not calling for volunteers, so I figured I'd give blood.
So you're giving blood?
Right.
I was down there when I saw that both planes hit. I was on Fulton Street by the Millennium Hotel. I was on my way into number 6. Another few minutes and I would have been in the debris. We all ran into the hotel garage. Then we stood outside in shock. And then I saw the bodies coming out of the building. I said, this is horrible. And then the second one hit. I came up here and I heard the appeal for blood. It's a horrible thing down there. I
mean, saw the bodies falling out of the
building.
There were
people who on the 90th floor, it was either burned to death or jump out of the building. They were jumping out of the building. Must have seen about 20 of them. It was people on the ground were in shock.
Both parents
are
positive, trauma positive.
Yeah.
Okay.
I
At a 12:15 outside Manhattan's Bellevue Hospital, there is a line of hundreds of New Yorkers filling out forms so that they can give blood inside. Just a half an hour ago, there were barely a dozen people here, and now the line stretches out through the grounds of Bellevue, out to First Avenue.
Here is a review of the story we're reporting today. The headquarters of the U.S. military came under direct terrorist attack this morning. A commercial jetliner was hijacked and crashed into the side of the Pentagon. American forces around the globe were put on highest alert. The White House and the Capitol building were evacuated. Also attacked this morning, the World Trade Center in New York City. Both skyscrapers, 110 stories tall, burned and then collapsed onto the street below after two jets smashed into the towers. A third building in the complex collapsed later this afternoon. Police are estimating that thousands of people were hurt or killed in New York alone. A fourth plane was hijacked this morning. It crashed in a field 80 miles outside of Pittsburgh. Before it went down, a passenger in that plane called 911 from his cell phone to try to get help. We'll be following this story throughout the rest of the day and tonight. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News.
This is special coverage from NPR News of today's terrorist attacks. I'm Robert Siegel in New York.
And in Washington, D.C., I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Noah Adams.
Senator, we heard a big bang, and then we saw smoke coming out, and everybody started running out, and we saw the plane on the other side of the building, and there was smoke everywhere, and people are jumping out the windows. Over there, they're jumping out the windows.
There is a major fire at the Pentagon. Of the full six-story height of the Pentagon is gone. The notch is about...
The building is falling right now. People are running through the street. Smoke is everywhere.
The United States will hunt down and punish those responsible for these cowardly acts.
Today, September 11th, 2001, the United States became the target of the worst terrorist attack in history.
These were parallel attacks on the most potent symbols of American financial and military power. At 9:15 this morning, an American Airlines plane hit the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York. About 20 minutes later, a second plane flew straight into the South Tower. Less than an hour after that, both buildings had fallen.
About an hour after the first strike in New York, a plane crashed into the Pentagon, collapsing one side of the building. Another plane crashed into a field near Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania. The White House was evacuated. The president, who was in Florida, was rushed to a secure location.
Hundreds of people were aboard the four planes that crashed. No one knows exactly how many people were in the World Trade Center when it was destroyed. The death toll could be in the thousands.
At 8:45 this morning, New Yorkers were arriving at work, picking up a bagel or a cup of coffee on the way when today's first wave of calamitous news was announced. Newscasters reached for precedent. 60 years ago, a plane had crashed into the Empire State Building. People watched on television and also through the windows of their apartments and office buildings that faced downtown, and they saw the event repeat itself at the second tower. It became clear that there was no precedent for what was happening today. It will no doubt be days before all the black boxes are retrieved and all the dead and injured are accounted for, and it will certainly be a lot longer than that before the people who were in downtown Manhattan this morning ever forget the experience. NPR's Melissa Block has been near the World Center today, World Trade Center today, and she's here with me now. Melissa, of course, the target was symbolic in some respects, but just for the sheer density of people who would be in one spot, you couldn't find more people packed in a small area than around the World Trade Center.
Absolutely, both for those killed and for those who were able to witness what happened, people walking to work over the Brooklyn Bridge. I talked with a construction worker named Murray Goff, who was at a construction site just north of the Twin Towers, and he described he had flown in last night from West Virginia, where he lives. He was working on this site when he heard the first jet screaming low overhead the work site.
And we heard it go over, and we looked up, and then we heard the crash. Run out here and looked and seen the plane where it went into the side. We're standing here, can't believe it. Whenever the second plane crashed through the smoke into the other one, well, as soon as I seen that plane hit, I said, it's a terrorist attack. They better call Red Alert, all for federal buildings. I mean, that's the only thing it could be, because it came in right above us and just banked and went into the building.
Came in right over your head?
Yeah, right over here, just right over like that and just banked.
You can see it with an American airline. I didn't see the American airline, but some of the workers looked up and seen the plane and noted it was an American Airlines.
And then police and emergency workers were rushed downtown.
That's right. So they're all drawn to the scene. These planes have gone into the buildings. They go in to try to evacuate personnel. And later I saw just dozens of police cars that were driving around covered with debris, their windows caved in from the explosion. These were still the operating vehicles that they were using. I spoke with a Lieutenant Thomas Ines, who's with the Port Authority Police. He responded to the scene. He was there trying to rescue people. He saw people jumping off the highest floors of the Twin Towers after the planes crashed, and then he was there when the buildings came down.
I guess the scariest part was being covered in dust and not being able to see, and breathing through my hat. It was pitch black.
And you were breathing through your police hat?
My hat, yes, because that's all I had with me.
The people who were jumping, did you see them fall?
Unfortunately, yes. It's not something I would like to talk about, and unfortunately, it's not something I'll ever be able to forget about. At first, you thought it was pieces of the building falling, until you realize that they had arms and legs. And at this point, I really wouldn't want to say anything more about it.
He was off to give blood, I gather, later in the day.
I don't know about him, but I did speak with the parent of a young child who was picking him up from school. You saw a lot of parents rushing to schools to pick up their children. Michael Ruddy stopped to talk to me. His wife worked in the Trade Center until a year ago. What did you tell your son?
Excuse me. I'm very emotional about this. I explained to him that something very terrible had happened, that the World Trade Center, which he knows very well, because he used to call it Mama's Building. I told him that it had been hit by an airplane and had now been destroyed and it doesn't exist anymore. He's, I think, concerned because he sees how sad I am. He kind of sees the sadness. See the sadness in me, and I think he's a little concerned about that. I asked a policeman outside school, what can I do? I want to do something, I want to help, and he said, give blood. So I'm going to go over to maybe St. Vincent's and see if I could do anything.
And indeed, there were many people going to many hospitals in Manhattan offering to give blood. Melissa, you live here, you cover this city, you've seen all kinds of things in New York. How would you describe the way New Yorkers coped with this today?
I don't think, I mean, clearly no one's seen anything like it, and it was a mix of things. You did see a lot of people who were drawn down as spectators, people with cameras. There was the little moment of a Salvation Army team that was setting out trays of milk and cookies, but at the same time, horror on the faces of New Yorkers as they clustered around radios, cars had their radios cranked, people just devastated by what had happened here today.
Thank you. NPR's Melissa Block.
Here in Washington, less than an hour after the second plane crashed into the World Trade Center, a third aircraft sliced into the Pentagon. Dozens of injured people were shipped to area hospitals. Many of the seats of power in the Capitol, the White House, the Capitol, the Treasury and State Departments, were evacuated. And 2 hours later, United Airlines confirmed a fourth plane crash near Pittsburgh with no reports of survivors among the 45 on board. NPR's Peter Kenyon joins us now. Let's go back to the morning crash at the Pentagon, Peter.
Well, law enforcement's NOAA officials say it was American Airlines Flight 77 en route from Dulles Airport in Virginia to Los Angeles that suddenly veered off course and smashed into the Pentagon. It ripped open a hole in the side of three of the five rings that you can see above ground on the Pentagon. Military officials said the fire was intense, the heat was blistering. At least 40 victims reported in local hospitals, 7 in critical conditions at a burn facility. Hard to get to the site because of the smoke and the fire. One victim from the plane has already been identified now. Barbara Olson, the wife of U.S. Solicitor General Theodore Olson, was aboard that flight. Law enforcement officials told the Associated Press Mrs. Olson called her husband from the plane and described the hijacking, saying that the hijackers were using knife-like instruments. Theodore Olson also confirmed that his wife was on board, saying he wished it wasn't so.
Now, to be clear about this, we had two planes hijacked that crashed into the Twin Towers in New York, and this would have been a hijacked aircraft also.
That's right. This one took off from Dulles Airport outside of Washington en route to Los Angeles and just immediately veered off and hit the Pentagon.
Especially shocking, this sort of attack on the Pentagon, the center of the military, and an attack really on the nation's capital.
It really was, Noah, and the rapid evacuation and the confusion around the city today was very telling. Tourists were being yelled at by agitated Secret Service agents. And it's kind of recognizing that confusion and how bad that might seem. The House and Senate leaders quickly gathered to say, we're going to reopen the Capitol as soon as possible. President Bush, who had been traveling in Louisiana and Nebraska, decided to come back to Washington, where he's expected to address the nation tonight. And the military remains on high alert status. Military vehicles have been seen on the streets of Washington, D.C. We're not expecting a lot of details from President Bush on how the government will respond to this attack, but clearly there are expectations of something significant. I might mention in Israel today, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon called it a turning point in the war against international terror.
Let's add a bit here about the fourth hijacked plane of the day. It crashed outside Pittsburgh.
Virginia Congressman James Moran, he's a Democrat whose district includes the Pentagon, he was briefed by military officials today, and after the briefing he said that he thought that that target was Camp David. The crash actually occurred about 85 miles northwest of Camp David, but there were, as you mentioned, 45 people on board, no expected survivors, and that crashed in a remote field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Peter. NPR's Peter Kenyon.
For the first time ever, all U.S. air traffic was shut down today. The planes involved in the four deadly crashes were hijacked from airports in Newark, Washington, and Boston. It's not yet clear how airport security in those cities was breached so dramatically, but the hijackings mean routine security procedures, from X-ray machines to employee background screening, will be scrutinized for vulnerabilities. And there may be limits to how much protection can be tightened. NPR's Emily Harris joins us now. Emily, first of all, do we know anything about how these teams managed to hijack the planes?
No real details yet, Linda. There's a lot of security measures in place at airports, but clearly the events today have proven that what we have now are breachable. The security measures go from everything to the questions you answer when you check in, to the cockpit door, which is supposed to be locked, to background checks of employees, metal detectors, all that sort of stuff. What's definitely going to happen here is a stepped up look at security measures. Although some people say, look, this isn't as much airport security as national security. Where was the intelligence that this was being planned?
How hard would it be to get, if it was in fact, if knives were used to hijack these planes, how hard would that be to get knives into an airplane?
Well, you do have metal detectors, obviously, that you go through, but there have been situations where those have been tested and breached. There have been officials, other individuals, some cases of reporters, I understand, have tried to take weapons through airport security and have succeeded. So there's obviously problems there. One real issue is the people who stand there, the scanners they're called, have an incredibly high turnover rate. They turn over at a rate of 100% a year nationally. So there's a lot more issues going on than do the X-ray machines work, for example.
Whoever took these planes controlled them over long distances and flew them into specific targets appeared to be pilots.
Yeah, it's clear to most security experts I've talked to that the people who did these attacks, planned them, were flying the planes. These planes are commercially available widely. It wouldn't be hard necessarily to get your hands on one and learn how to do it. But you definitely have to do that, because with today's planes, you push the wrong button and you wouldn't actually hit the World Trade Center. You'd do something else.
Thanks very much, Emily.
Thank you.
NPR's Emily Harris. This is special coverage from NPR News on today's terrorist attacks. I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Noah Adams. To bring us up to date on the extent of the victims, we turn now to NPR's Rick Carr, who's in Brooklyn. Rick, can we put numbers here on the number of dead and injured in New York and also really in Washington, D.C. and in Pennsylvania?
Well, what we know so far, Noah, is that four aircraft went down, two American Airlines flights and two United Airlines flights. They were carrying a total of 266 people. There were 92 people on American Airlines Flight 11, which was the first to hit the World Trade Center. There were 65 on United Airlines Flight 75, which was the second to hit. There were 64 on American Airlines Flight 77, which struck the Pentagon, and there were 45 on United Airlines Flight 93, which crashed in Pennsylvania. At the Pentagon, 50 people went to D.C. area hospitals. Eight of those are in intensive care. Seven are in burn trauma units. In New York City, 1,500 people, the walking wounded, were transported almost immediately across the Hudson River to a New Jersey park. 600 or more are currently in New York City hospitals. Officials at New York hospitals are saying 10 to 20% of those who have come in are in critical condition, and there are more coming in. The New York Police Department told the Associated Press this afternoon that they think that 10,000 or more people may be dead in the wreckage of the World Trade Center, and New Jersey officials are reportedly clearing the same park that was used for the walking wounded earlier today to serve as a temporary morgue.
Just to go back over that, the NYPD is saying it could be 10,000 still in the wreckage there.
It could be 10,000. The estimates are that 40,000 to 50,000 people work in the World Trade Center buildings every day, and it's unclear as to how many had arrived for work and then how many got back out when the buildings finally collapsed.
Now, in New York City, how are the hospitals coping with this?
Some of the hospitals have already closed in Lower Manhattan. At least one, St. Vincent's Hospital, was already full. That's the trauma center that's nearest the World Trade Center. They had admitted nearly 200 people by the time, or had treated nearly 200 people by the time they closed. They had two deaths there. They're sending patients elsewhere now, if they're able to go elsewhere. Bellevue Hospital, a little bit farther away from there, another large trauma center, had more than 120 minor injuries, more than 20 major injuries, and so far two people were dead on arrival there. Most of the injuries that are coming in are cuts and scrapes. Some of them are quite severe lacerations, lots of broken bones. The most severe cases are severe burns, crushing, severe bodily trauma. Most of the cases, however, are smoke and dust inhalation. There's been a massive cloud of dust and smoke that's been coming out of the wreckage of the World Trade Centers all day long and affecting all of Lower Manhattan and parts of Brooklyn.
And what is it like, and what's it been like today in Brooklyn to be there?
People are absolutely in shock. I mean, I know that sounds like a bit of a cliche, but people are walking around the neighborhood where I live, ashen-faced. They don't really know what to say. They're gathering in shop windows to watch televisions and try to keep up to date and reaching out to one another to sort of try to console one another, but it hasn't all really sunk in yet. I went down to the Brooklyn waterfront earlier today, and there were dozens of people sitting on the rocks near a ruined pier in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and they were, for the most part, silent. They just couldn't think of what to say. They were staring across the East River, which had very light traffic on it today. You know, normally there are lots of boats going up and down the East River, very little traffic, just sort of staring across the water on this beautiful day and watching this column of smoke move across. Just couldn't find the words. Nobody there could really find the words to explain what they were feeling. Some people, however, were extremely angry, calling for retribution, even though they weren't entirely sure who had done this.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, Noah.
NPR's Rick Carr speaking with us from Brooklyn. Back now to our colleague Robert Siegel in New York, who was out today talking to people at Grand Central Terminal earlier.
In Midtown Manhattan this morning, mobs of commuters who had barely arrived at work struggled to leave the city. They streamed en masse up and down the avenues, and as they looked downtown, they could see a huge cloud of dust, smoke, and debris in the sky, obscuring the skyscrapers of the financial district. The evidence of the collapse of the World Trade Center towers hung in the sky all day. At 42nd Street, people headed for Grand Central Terminal. At 10:50 this morning, they found the doors to the railroad station shut and blocked by transit police. Then, just before 11, the transit police got word by walkie-talkie that another entrance to the station just down the block was about to open. From every direction, people walked into the station. The empty hall of Grand Central filled up in no time, and by 11:05, thousands of commuters seeking an exit to the suburbs stood watching for news of a departure. Among them, Surendra Patel, an accountant, and Roseanne Rotunda, who works for Pfizer.
I'm trying to get to White Plains, which is not where I live. It's just where my husband works. I'm just trying to be anywhere but here.
Anywhere but Manhattan.
Right. Pretty much.
I'm trying to go to Scarsdale. And, terrible. I saw the building, second building collapsing myself. Terrible. Just terrible.
By 10 past 11, though, the police spread the latest orders.
No trains. Evacuate the building. I have no idea.
Attention, please. Please evacuate Grand Central. Go to the nearest exit. Evacuate Grand Central Terminal now.
And with uncharacteristic discipline, no doubt born of fear, the crowd that had just filled the station left it empty once again. The subways were closed, Hudson River crossings were shut, the buses were packed. Those with cell phones used them, those without lined up at payphones. At 34th Street, there was suddenly word that the Queens Midtown Tunnel was open. A large air-conditioned bus, a Hampton Jitney it was called, pulled up to a curb. And when its front door opened, police officer Mike Pletus addressed the crowd that was waiting outside.
Everybody gets off at Maurice Avenue. Officer, where's Maurice Avenue anyway?
Even if some of these people didn't know where Maurice Avenue was, that didn't seem to matter. It was someplace closer to home, and it was someplace safer.
Here is a review of today's terrorist attack. Four commercial flights were hijacked this morning, two American Airlines planes and two United planes. Two crashed into the World Trade Center towers. Less than an hour later, both of the burning towers fell to the street below. A third building, 47 stories tall, collapsed about 5:20 Eastern Time this afternoon. Also attacked the Pentagon. One side of the building collapsed after the plane plowed into it. The injured were taken to area hospitals. The White House and the Capitol were evacuated. A fourth plane went down in a field outside of Pittsburgh. We'll be following the story throughout the rest of the evening and tonight. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of today's terrorist attacks. I'm Robert Siegel in New York.
And in Washington, D.C., I'm Linda Wertheimer.
And I'm Noah Adams. Today brought the worst act of terrorism anywhere ever, perhaps thousands killed.
Four commercial jets were hijacked and crashed into civilian and military targets, two into the World Trade Center, one into the Pentagon, one outside Pittsburgh.
President Bush will address the nation tonight in 2.5 hours' time.
In New York City tonight, people are still struggling to comprehend the day's events. Beth Fertig from member station WNYC just came from a news conference with New York's mayor, Rudolph Giuliani, and she joins us now. Beth, because of where City Hall is located, the mayor himself was an eyewitness to this disaster. What did he say about his experience?
Well, the mayor is a very hands-on type of mayor, and he went immediately to the World Trade Center when the first plane struck the first tower. And then, sometime before the second plane struck the next tower, he became stuck in one of the surrounding buildings. He was stuck there for quite some time and became an eyewitness to the collapse of one of the buildings. And some reporters ran into him on the street as he was fleeing with his entourage, trying to figure out where to go next. And he wound up at another location with the governor, an undisclosed location for security reasons, where he's been briefing reporters throughout the day.
In New York City now, the effort must be simply to get people out of the area and into hospitals if they need to, try to get the dead out of the building.
Yes, that's right. The mayor and the governor and the police commissioner refuse to speculate on how many people have died. They say that it's just too early to talk about that yet. There's no way to know, and it would be unfair. We'd just be guessing, they told us. But right now, what they can tell us is about 2,000 people were taken by ferry across the river in Lower Manhattan to Liberty State Park in New Jersey for treatment. These were the walking wounded, so to speak. Another 600 people were taken to area hospitals. All of the hospitals have been put on mobilization. They're giving out phone numbers for people who want to volunteer as nurses or doctors to relieve the people who are treating the wounded right now. There's been a huge push for blood donations and an enormous response from the city. And the city is also gearing up tomorrow. The schools are going to be closed. Lower Manhattan, south of 14th Street, is all going to be closed. The stock market's going to be closed. The election's been called off. We were supposed to be voting today for mayor and other city officials. So the whole city is really dealing with a search and rescue operation right now. They've put off all investigations. The FBI's assistant director, Barry Mon, was here, and he said that the investigation of why this happened is taking, or what happened exactly, is taking a back seat to the actual search and rescue, which has been hindered, I should add, by the collapse of more buildings. It's not just the two towers that went down. There's also another building in the World Trade Center complex that just collapsed and some other surrounding buildings that were affected that are also collapsing. So it's a tremendous danger right now in Lower Manhattan. They're saying they can't even get in there to rescue the injured or the dying, so they can't do an investigation. They don't even know if there was a bomb that brought these buildings down. They're not talking about that right now. All they'll say is they know that they were hit by two planes.
Beth, where were you this morning?
Well, I was awoken by my news director and told to get down to Lower Manhattan as soon as I could. And my apartment is in Greenwich Village, and I face the World Trade Center. And when I walked outside, I saw two holes in the Twin Towers from the planes that had struck. I then ran down as soon as possible, and I tried to get to the scene and was pushed away by some police saying, you can't get any closer, you can't get any closer. And all of a sudden, there was a boom, like the sound of a subway, and one of the towers collapsed, and there was a whoosh of debris that was just heading east toward the East River, and thousands of people running and screaming as fast as they could up Lower Broadway. And it was like a scene out of a disaster movie. I just couldn't believe it. Everybody was screaming. There was mm-hmm. panic everywhere. And people were coming out with soot all over their faces, saying they had seen people jumping off of the Twin Towers. They had seen people fleeing right. the flames. It was an incredible scene.
Beth, thank you very much.
Thank you.
NPR's Beth Ferdig reporting from New York City.
NPR's John McChesney is at the scene of the other attack today, the Pentagon, across the Potomac River from Washington, D.C., the District of Columbia. John, what's going on right there now?
Well, no, I'm standing about 25 yards in front of the Pentagon, about 50 yards down from where the aircraft hit the Pentagon. I'm surrounded by hundreds of firemen. They've been fighting this fire now for 9 hours. It's mostly extinguished. The roof is crawling with firemen now. They've got three fucking ladders up here, and they're trying to punch through the roof and put out the rest of the fire. And some very weary-looking guys who've been fighting this fire for a long time from all over the D.C. area. There are fire departments here from Arlington, from D.C., plus rescue squads. So far, I have not seen anybody taken out this side of the building. If there have been any injured taken out, they were taken toward the core of the Pentagon, toward the inside. But right now, to my left, the old guard, which is made up of all the military branches of service, the guys who do the ceremonies at Arlington Cemetery and the guys who give tours of the Pentagon, are lined up for the very grim task soon of going inside and finding the dead and removing them. They're all wearing surgical masks. They all have litters and body bags.
Does it seem as if there are enough rescue crews on the scene at the Pentagon?
There are a lot of rescue crews here, and I've seen a number of the professional crews go in. It has been, I have to tell you, extremely chaotic here today. I came in here and actually was recruited to be on one of the litter crews. We were mobilized, I think, four times, lined up, given masks and rubber gloves, and each time we would line up, they decided they didn't want to send us in, which is probably very smart because this is a bunch of amateurs and not very well clothed for the effort. It's when you get this many different fire departments, this many different rescue people, this many branches of the service all trying to do something like this, you realize how quickly unraveled things can come. It's very, very difficult for anybody to kind of command and control something that's chaotic.
What about inside the Pentagon itself, inside the military? A bit of confusion earlier. Do we know where Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld is, for example?
I don't know where he is right now. I've seen him twice over here today, but I haven't seen him recently. The Joint Chiefs, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs was over here a little earlier as well. Basically, I think this is just, you know, the hard work of getting this fire extinguished and getting people in there to find the dead and hopefully anybody who may still be surviving. I would think by now the fire people probably would have been able to find any living survivors.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Noah.
NPR's John McChesney talking with us from the Pentagon.
We're going... We can tell you where Donald Rumsfeld is. He is at the White House. He is apparently giving a briefing to reporters, and we will take you to that briefing just as soon as we possibly can. Mr. Rumsfeld is attempting to talk about what the kind of attack that occurred at the Pentagon, and who is responsible for it. He has, according for the picture that I can see on television, he is there's a shield, and behind him. He appears to be at the Pentagon. Here's Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld.
Kind enough to come down and has been with us. We've very recently had a discussion with the President of the United States. Chairman Hugh Shelton has just landed from Europe. Secretary of the Army Tom White, who has a responsibility for incidents like this as executive agent for the Department of Defense, is also joining me. It's an indication that the United States government is functioning in the face of this terrible act against our country. I should add that the briefing here is taking place in the Pentagon. The Pentagon's functioning. It'll be in business tomorrow. I know the interest in casualty figures, and all I can say is it's not possible to have solid casualty figures at this time. And the various components are doing roster checks, and we'll have information at some point in the future, and as quickly as it's possible to have it, it will certainly be made available to each of you. I'll be happy to take a few questions after asking First General Shelton if he would like to say anything, and then we will allow the others to make a remark or two.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Ladies and gentlemen, as the Secretary just said, today we have watched the tragedy of an outrageous act of barbaric terrorism carried out by fanatics against both civilians and military people, acts that have killed and maimed many innocent and decent citizens of our country. I extend my condolences to the entire Department of Defense families, military and civilian.
You're listening to General Hugh Shelton, who is chairman of the Joint Chiefs,
who lost loved ones. I think this is indeed a reminder of the tragedy and the tragic dangers that we face day in and day out, both here at home as well as abroad. I would tell you up front, I have no intentions of discussing today what comes next, but make no mistake about it, your armed forces are ready.
Chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Carl Levin.
This is Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, Chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee.
Recovery and helping the injured and the families of those who were killed is matched only by our determination to prevent more attacks and matched only by our unity to track down, root out, and relentlessly pursue terrorists, states that support them, and harbor them. They are the common enemy of the civilized world. Our institutions are strong, and our unity is palpable.
Senator John Warner.
Thank you. As a past chairman, preceding Carl Levin,
the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, was holding a news conference at the Pentagon. We have just heard from the Secretary and then from General Hugh Shelton of the Joint Chiefs, who said that there would be a military response, although he said that he was not prepared to discuss what it would be. He said, your military is ready. And Senator Levin then told us that the Republicans and Democrats are completely united in the effort to do something about what has happened today in the United States, the worst terrorist attack ever.
And as we have heard from Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld, it sort of reminds us that President George W. Bush is expected to address the nation later this evening as well. We're joined now by NPR's diplomatic correspondent Mike Schuster. Mike, this is not the first time the World Trade Center was the target of a terrorist attack.
No, that's true, Robert.
A little history here.
In 1993, there was a bomb that was exploded at the World Trade Center, and at that point, only six people were killed, but hundreds were injured. Four Muslims were arrested for that and put on trial, and in the investigation afterwards, it became clear that, in fact, their intention was to topple the World Trade Center. So that's a very important starting point to maybe understand, perhaps, who may have been responsible for this.
Go ahead, by the way, clear from the trial, why the World Trade Center? What it signified to them that they wanted to topple these buildings?
I'm not sure. I think that it was a big symbol, a big target, and something that would be spectacular. And I think that issue of spectacular action since 1993 in terrorist acts against the United States is something that has motivated terrorists and those who are planning these things. In the Millennium Plot, which emerged in late December 1999, it seems clear that whoever was whoever brought those explosives from Canada into Washington and ultimately Los Angeles International Airport was the target, that was going to be done in coordination with an attack on a U.S. warship in Yemen, which didn't occur at that point, and attacks on U.S. tourists in Jordan. So this notion of coordination and the effect of such coordinated attack on the psychology of the United States has been clearly in terrorist minds for some years now.
Any other aspects of today's attacks that you see that are similar to terrorist actions in the past?
I think that the one thing that we have to look at as well is who might have been responsible. And there's another connection to the World Trade Center, and that's in the person of Ramzi Youssef, who is believed to have been the mastermind of the first attack on the World Trade Center. He was kidnapped, in effect, by U.S. agents in Pakistan, taken to New York and put on trial and convicted for masterminding that. And Youssef himself, in the early 90s, was discovered to be plotting against perhaps a dozen U.S. airlines in the Far East to have coordinated attacks as well. So there's this issue of aviation, hijacking, and coordinated attacks that seems to have culminated in this attack today.
But I mean, isn't there a qualitative difference, though, here, in that these weren't just attacks on airlines? These were four hijackings by people who, it seems, were skilled enough to actually pilot these aircrafts, their targets.
There's no question, but there are camps in Afghanistan and Pakistan that have trained terrorists. They have been soldiers in Afghanistan, soldiers in Pakistan, and other parts of the Islamic world. They could very well have piloting skills as well as explosive skills, and they may have been mustered if, in fact, those are the sources of this attack for what happened today.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Okay, Robert.
NPR diplomatic correspondent Mike Schuster. Linda?
Within the past few minutes, the president has arrived back in Washington. He landed at Andrews Air Force Base, and he plans to address the country in just over 2 hours' time. NPR's White House correspondent Don Gagne joins us now. Don, do we know what the president wants to say?
We can assume that he has a couple of goals this evening. First, he needs to reassure the nation that that the institutions of this country, that the federal government is functioning, and that his team of national security advisors and his cabinet and he himself are addressing this situation, and that appropriate emergency response measures have been taken. There's that, but there will also be an element of I'm sure very unvarnished, very very tough talk about the need to, as he said in very brief remarks that he made earlier in the day, hunt down and use the full force of the U.S. government to find out who is responsible for what the White House has called cowardly and despicable acts.
Don, it seems extraordinary that the president has waited this long. The attacks took place hours ago, this morning, at around rush hour, mm-hmm. Eastern Daylight Time. And the president has, except for speaking briefly, as you just said,
right,
the president has not made that reassuring appearance, has not said what the United States may do.
I think that is why he is coming back tonight to make these statements. I think the White House is also picking up a sense out there that people need to hear from the president tonight.
I wondered if there might be some strategic reason for waiting.
I think that there were concerns about his safety and the security surrounding the president of the United States. They needed to make sure they had him in a place. He left Florida hastily this morning. We were told he was going to an undisclosed location. That's when he landed at the air base in Louisiana, where we got the longest comments we've had from him so far. But then again, it was off to another undisclosed location, and he's suddenly at the Strategic Air Command out in Omaha. And they clearly have decided over the course of these past several hours that it is important for him to look into the TV camera this evening and sit before the microphone. down and talk to all of us and the American public.
Thanks very much. Mm-hmm. NPR's White House correspondent, Don Gagne.
The attacks on the World Trade Center building in New York and the Pentagon in Washington are significant not only for their size, but also for the apparent planning and resources that made them possible. Alan Brinkley is a professor of history at Columbia University in New York City. He says today's events will force the country to view its relationship with the rest of the world differently, even as we make efforts to find those responsible for the attacks.
I think what makes this so extraordinary is the enormous scale of what happened today and the obvious massive conspiracy that was behind it, the large-scale coordination. I mean, so many things happened that are so difficult to do today that it really does make one feel that there's a much larger force at work in this event than was at work in the Oklahoma City bombing or the first World Trade Center bombing or any of the other, you know, sort of scattered terrorist events we've had in the United States.
You have to ask yourself, if somebody was able actually to successfully hijack, more or less successfully hijack, four aircraft, commercial airliners, today in the morning, why couldn't they have done it 2 months ago?
Clearly there is, they have found some way around the security mechanisms we've developed. The airports from which these planes were hijacked are not low security airports. So, I mean, I think that's what is going to take some time to sink in our national psyche is the magnitude of this event and the total secrecy within which it had been shrouded.
There have been comparisons made and will continue to be made with Pearl Harbor almost 60 years ago. 2,000 people died and America begins an involvement in a world war. Is it a fair comparison today?
Well, it's a fair comparison and an unfair comparison. I mean, this is not an act of war in any conventional sense. I don't think anybody imagines that there will be an invasion of the United States or that large-scale military activity will at least immediately follow this. One of the central characteristics of our culture throughout our history has been our sense of being protected by the two oceans, that we're somehow separated from the rest of the world and safer, in a way, than the rest of the world. But I think what this does is demonstrate the falsity of that assumption. We are not protected from the rest of the world. We're part of the world. And that a terrorist event of this scale, which has never happened in any part of the world, to my knowledge, nothing of this magnitude has happened in any other nation, has happened here. It's going to be a very hard thing, I think, for Americans to assimilate.
Professor Brinkley, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Alan Brinkley teaches American history at Columbia University.
We've talked during the course of today about the four domestic commercial airliners which were hijacked this morning. They were American Airlines Flight 11 from Boston to Los Angeles, which crashed into a tower of New York's World Trade Center at about 8:45 this morning. That plane was carrying 81 passengers, 9 attendants, and 2 pilots. Nearly 20 minutes later, the other tower was struck by United Airlines Flight 175 from Boston to Los Angeles. It was carrying 56 passengers, 2 pilots, and 7 attendants. Both towers burned and collapsed. A third building in the World Trade Center collapsed this afternoon. American Airlines Flight 77 from Washington Dulles to Los Angeles crashed into the Pentagon at about 9:40 this morning. The plane was carrying 58 passengers, 4 flight attendants, and 2 pilots. We will be following this story throughout the rest of the day and tonight. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News.